Hello and welcome to the Hotchkiss and Wiley podcast series. My name is John Hossie, and today I'm joined by Scott McBride, President and Portfolio Manager on the Hotchkiss and Wiley Large Cap Fundamental Value Strategy. Scott has 22 years of industry experience, with the past 19 of those here at the firm. The revival of value is underway, and we believe we are still in the early innings of this movement. I'll delve into this further with Scott, but first a few disclosures. This podcast is for general information only and should not be relied on for investment advice or recommendation of any particular security, strategy, or investment product. The portfolio manager's views and opinions expressed in this podcast are as of April 13th, 2021. Such views are subject to change and may differ from others in the firm or the firm as a whole. The portfolio manager's comments include some estimated and/or forecasted views, which are believed to be based on reasonable assumptions within the bounds of current and historical information. However, there is no guarantee that any estimates, forecasts, or views will be realized. In the event of new information or changed circumstances, Hotchkiss & Wiley reserves the right to change its investment perspective and outlook. Scott, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, John.
So we just went through one of the most extraordinary periods in modern history that resulted in outsized market volatility, but culminated in one of the best rolling 12-month return periods ever for value managers, and Hotchkiss & Wiley in particular, as of the end of March. I would love to get your perspective on the past year and how you continue to focus on guiding the strategy through such a difficult time.
Okay, well, as you said, there's a lot we could talk about during the last 12 months. Generally speaking, periods of extreme economic uncertainty, and this was obviously one of those periods, they do create extreme volatility in stock price performance, and that's what we saw in 2020. And while that stock price performance is not fun for anybody to go through, it really does create big investment opportunities for a firm with an investment philosophy like ours. And so, what we're trying to do is really look through what might be happening with a company or an industry today and make decisions based on how a stock is trading relative to our estimate of each company's fair value. And so that's really the most important factor for us when we're seeing a lot of stock price volatility like we saw last year. What we're focused on is how is that stock trading relative to what we think the business is worth. And while we're value investors, we don't define a value stock as a stock with a low price to book ratio or trading at a low price to earnings ratio. We really define a value stock as a stock that trades at a discount to our estimate of fair value. And we define that by the present value of the company's earnings stream. And so when we're thinking about fair value, we're going to incorporate a lot of different factors into that. What the company's growth rate is, what their sustainable return on investment capital are, what the governance structure for the company, its balance sheet. And so when we look in 2020, what we saw was a huge number of investment opportunities that traded, in our opinion, at a significant discount to what the company's fair value was. And so if you look at our portfolio turnover, it picked up dramatically in 2020 as we looked to take advantage of all the opportunities we saw. And, the news in November of the good news out of Pfizer with their vaccine, and then a week later with Moderna, I think that kicked off a period in time when the market started to look a little bit beyond the pandemic. And a lot of the names we were finding in our portfolio trading at big discounts, they started to see a pretty dramatic move up in their prices.
That's a good segue, Scott. So let's turn to the first quarter of 2021. Your strategy outperformed the Russell 1000 Value Index by over 700 basis points net of fees. Can you talk about what drove the outperformance?
Yeah, so the biggest driver of performance in the quarter was the portfolio's exposure to what I would broadly call cyclical stocks. And I would say that's stocks in really a lot of different industries, but it would include financials and industrials, consumer, energy, and tech. And as we were just talking about, I think 2020 is a great example of how short-term oriented the market can be and in how it does present opportunities to investors willing to think long-term. So a lot of these cyclical stocks dramatically underperformed in 2020. The pandemic was clearly a short-term headwind to earnings. And a lot of these companies saw a pretty significant decline in earnings in 2020. I think if you talk to someone who followed the pandemic closely, and if you talk to a lot of different economists, I think a lot of people would expect that at some point we're going to get past this pandemic. And that long term, in our mind, earnings for these companies are really going to look more like what they looked in 2019 than what they looked like in 2020. But a lot of companies were priced as if 2020 was earnings is what they'd look like indefinitely. And so as we started to see progress in the pandemic and how vaccines and treatments were able to handle it And we saw an economic reopening. I think the market started to be willing to look beyond the pandemic. And that's really, you know, why we saw pretty strong movements in prices in Q1 of 2020 and then Q1 of 2021. So really the cyclical parts of the portfolio, and we have a lot of those, were drive performance. I think if you looked at what lagged in the first quarter, it was really names that had done pretty well in 2020. Businesses that weren't particularly cyclical, whose earnings was not particularly impacted by the pandemic, and therefore outperformed in 2020. Those were the names that lagged in the first quarter of 21.
At the end of March, the strategy's largest overweight sectors were financials and energy. Can you talk about the opportunity you're seeing in these sectors versus other sectors such as consumer staples or materials?
Sure. So financials is about 30% of the portfolio, and that would include banks, capital markets companies, and property casualty insurance. That's most of that 30%. And I think that a point to make before we get into some more details is that financials as a whole, on average, do trade at a discount to the overall market over time. I think that makes sense. On average, they should trade at a lower overall price. These are capital intensive businesses. They tend to grow at a pretty, you know, low growth rate. And by the nature they're in, they're levered businesses. And so, as I said, they should trade at a discount to the overall market. I think the point today is that the valuation gap between financials and the market is very wide. It's much wider than it's historically been. And so that to us means it's a good place to start looking for ideas. And so why are these stocks undervalued? Again, I would go back to the idea that in many cases, the market's short-term oriented. So there are industry-specific issues that the pandemic has been a real headwind to many of these companies' earnings in the short term. And that's because, one, it causes you to increase credit provisions. Two, it leads to lower loan growth. And three, there's just some certain, you know, transactions that you don't see in a weak economy that you'd see in a normal economy. So there are short-term headwinds to earnings. I think the market's very focused on that. I think we're willing to think longer term and realize that someday we'll be in a better economic environment and earnings for these banks will look a lot better. I think the other thing you'll hear a lot is you don't want to own financials in a low interest rate environment. And our view on that is that that point is overdone. Low rates do have an impact on earnings and profitability for a lot of these companies, but in many cases, it's pretty modest. And so in our mind, these companies are still really attractively priced even in this low rate environment. And then if we do see higher rates in the future, that's kind of an extra tailwind to these investments. And I think the other point to make is, you know, we're bottom up stock pickers. So I'm talking about reasons to think that the financials are a good place to hunt for ideas. But there's a lot of company specific turnaround opportunities in our portfolio, situations where we believe that the current or recent earnings power doesn't really reflect, you know, what this kind of business should be able to earn over a long period of time. And that we've got management teams that we believe will be able to unlock the hidden value. And that's also a big part of the financials weight. The energy overweight, energy really is an industry that's been left for dead. There's one point in my 19 years at Hotchkiss and Wiley where 18% of the Russell 1000 value is in energy. And today it's just 5%. And it's significantly smaller in the S&P 500. So we have a 12% weight in energy. And that is obviously a lot bigger than those numbers I talked about, just 5% in the value index. Again, like financials, there's a lot of time spent valuing and understanding each company we've invested in and how to value those assets. But the common theme to many of the investments in energy for us is the idea that the oil price, we think, needs to be in a kind of a sustainable $60 to $70 range. And that, you know, the last number of years when prices have been lower, the energy industry really hasn't been investing enough in supply. And so this lack of an investment at some point is going to be a problem, and there's not going to be enough supply to meet what we think is going to be kind of stable, slow growing oil demand. And that we're going to need to see these kinds of prices sustainably and maybe higher prices for a short period of time to incentivize more investment. And the energy stocks and certainly the ones in our portfolio as a whole do not price in anything close to these kinds of prices. So there's a lot of company specific work that goes on, but that is a theme that cuts across a lot of the energy names. So the low interest rate environment of the last decade has had a big impact in our mind on the relationship between growth and value stocks, but it's also had a pretty big impact within the value part of the market. And while we think that the cyclical parts of the market are pretty fertile hunting grounds for investments, the economically stable parts of the value market, like consumer staple, like parts of real estate, and like utilities, for example, they've seen their multiples expand. They're kind of treated as bond proxies. And it's difficult for us to find small investments in those areas, but it's really been difficult for us to find significantly, new ideas trading at a discount to fair value in that part of the market.
Now, Scott, you've alluded to valuation opportunities in certain areas. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing in terms of the valuation divergence between value and growth currently and how your strategy sizes up?
Yeah, so similar to the discussion with banks, if you look over a long period of time, value stocks should trade at a discount to growth stocks. I think that makes sense. Value stocks grow slower, and sometimes they're not as good businesses as some of the growth stocks. I think what we've seen in recent years is that this valuation spread, the price the market is willing to pay for growth stocks relative to the price the market's willing to pay for value stocks has really gapped out. And that multiple expansion has been a big tailwind for growth stocks. So since 1995, the average PE premium the market was willing to pay for the Russell 1000 growth versus the Russell 1000 value is about 40%. That premium got all the way to 100% last year in the middle of the pandemic. It has come down, as we talked about. The last two quarters have been better for value investors, but it's still at a significant premium. We think about a 65% premium on earnings. And so historically speaking, growth stocks still remain, in our mind, relatively overpriced to value stocks.
Now, finally, Scott, inflation breakevens are at the highest level since just before the Great Financial Crisis. Rising breakevens have historically provided a tailwind, as you mentioned before, to value strategies. Do you have any thoughts on this dynamic as economic growth and ensuing inflation expectations continue to move higher?
Yeah, I think there's a few interesting points here. First point I'd say is if you believe in economic recovery and that the world will get past this pandemic in the coming years, then I think our portfolio is pretty well positioned to take advantage of this. As I mentioned, we're obviously a value investor, so we tend to have a big overweight to the Russell 1000 value stocks. But as I mentioned, we're overweight cyclical stocks within the Russell 1000 value. And we still think those cyclical stocks trade at a big discount to the overall market, and they should benefit from economic recovery. I think the second point to make is that the low interest rate environment has been a big tailwind to growth stocks in our mind. Growth stocks are longer duration equities. And like long duration bonds, movements in rates have a bigger impact on their discounted cash flow valuation than they do for value stocks. So a low interest rate environment has been a big tailwind to growth stocks, but I think a higher interest rate environment would be a big tailwind to value stocks and a headwind to growth stocks. So I'd say if you believe in economic recovery, if you're worried about inflation and the potential for higher rates, I do think that our portfolio is particularly well positioned to benefit from those.
Well, thank you, Scott. And with that, we thank our audience for their interest in Hotchkiss & Wiley and the Hotchkiss & Wiley Large Cap Fundamental Value Strategy. For further information, please visit www.hwcm.com or call us at 888-596-4926.